we will resume our scientific talks. So we have two talks before lunch, both of them on the subject of X-ray diffraction. As you all know, these X-ray studies have really given us fantastic new information about the process of charge ordering in cuprates, and beautiful complementary information from soft X-rays on the one hand and hard X-rays on the other. So we're fortunate to have two of the young leaders of these two efforts today. So let me start by welcoming Mathieu Le Tacon, who's working with Bernhard Keimer at the Max Planck Institute in Stuttgart. And so Mathieu will talk about charge density waves in the cuprates from X-ray scattering.
Okay, so thank you, Louis and Antoine, first for this nice invitation. So it's been a while. I haven't been to conference. It's a real pleasure to do it actually in Paris and in this fantastic place. So I would like first to acknowledge some of my collaborators, so mostly Bernhard Keimer, in the group of which I'm working at the Max Planck Institute in Stuttgart, and Alex Fragno, who was a PhD student who did most of the actual resonant X-ray scattering work, together with Santiago Blanco Canosa and also Matteo Minola, who is sitting in the assistant in the audience. And all this work has been done, or most of it has been done, in close collaboration with Giacomo Geringhelli and Lucio Brajkovic from the Politecnico di Milano, and in collaboration with many other groups, and get data from a lot of facilities. So we've heard already about that. So this is just a cuprate phase diagram. So you know this layered structure with the copper oxide plants. You can change in YBCO, you can change the chemical composition of the layers between the planes and change the all dopings of the planes. And by doing that, you go from a MOT charge transfer, a strongly correlated insulator at half filling, to the superconducting states, which had until very recently the world record for the highest critical temperature. And of course, the key questions, so despite 30 years of research, is what are the origin of superconductivity and the nature of the normal states out of which it emerged. So it's fairly clear that at very high doping in the metallic state, we get a good family quit. And then we get this strange metal phase, and below a certain T-star transition, so still debated whether it's a crossover or an actual phase transition, there's the opening of the pseudo gap that was first seen with NMR, so a drop in the spin susceptibility here. When you cross that line well above the superconducting states. And there's a big question, of course, of what's the origin of the pseudo gap, what are the spectroscopic manifestations of that state, and whether it has anything to do with the interplay of the quasi-particles with other ground state than superconductivity. So one of the clear manifestations of that pseudo gap state is this partial gapping of the Fermi surface. So there's only Fermi arcs that remain when you look at the Fermi surface. And it's been discussed whether you get further orders, so that's like stripe orders, charge density wave, or more exotic orbital currents that are responsible for that pseudo gap. So one of the as Marc-Henri said, so in his talk, one of the precursor for all the competing order is actually the so-called stripe order that is seen in some of the cuprates, so the 214 cuprates with barium or the LSCO, but with some rare earths like neodymium or europium substituted. And the idea is that you get this kind of interlock charge and spin order pattern, where the static charge modulation follows closely the magnetic order. And when that happens, so close to the 1/8 doping, you get a strong suppression here in Labacu of the superconducting critical temperature. And one of the questions is, of course, whether stripeness is universal to cuprate. So I note that this paper is actually much older than Marc-Henri said. Like, so 95 is the is the experimental observation of the charge order, but some guys thought about it before. And what I'm going to talk about is this discovery now of this charge-ordered phase that is fairly ubiquitous. So it's seen in a lot of families of cuprates, and it sits within the pseudogap. So it's not the pseudogap, but it's a phase that happens within the pseudogap state, and it's maximized around this 12% doping level. So the technique that we used mostly to investigate it is X-ray scattering, and in particular resonant X-ray scattering. So this is just a slide to explain this is a photon in, photon out technique. But the resonant part comes from the fact that we tune the incident energy to some absorption edge, which gives some element and site selectivity to the probe. And we can do it essentially inelastic by analyzing the energy and the momentum of the scattered photon, or energy integrated. This is the Rex, and we can look at the dispersion of the excitations, and we get some kind of selection rules from the polarization dependence of that thing. So you can look in these recent reviews what you can measure with Rex or kind of excitations, or the insight you can get from the energy integrated counterpart, the Rex, where you just integrate over everything. So we were doing some Rex measurements on the cuprates to try to understand the doping evolution of the magnetic excitations. When Lucio Brajkovic here made this fantastic observation that if you just look at the elastic line in some of the cuprates at around this 12% doping, you get a very anomalous dependence of the elastic line with the transfer momentum. So it has a peak clearly located around 0.3. And the big surprise came when we found out that the peak was more or less the same in the both directions, so both along A star and B star direction. It tells us that we are dealing with a biaxial modulation of the charge. So we know it's a charge from this polarization selection rules, because the spin would give us a very different polarization dependence. And the strength also of this resonant technique is that we are able to distinguish between the copper in the chains and the copper in the planes. And so we know that it's also a modulation from the charge in the copper oxide planes. So, of course, based on the stripe story, so we know that there's also some incommensurate magnetic order that is occurring. So in the 214 families. And in the YBCO family, the evolution of the low energy magnetism, or the magnetic structure, has been also widely studied as a function of doping. And there's also this incommensurate structure that develops as you dope the system. And the incommensurability increases linearly with doping. But in the doping range where we observe the charged signal, there is essentially no more static magnetism. And you get a large spin gap that is open. And so no signature of static magnetism. So there's really no stripes in the sense of this 214 stripe that we were talking about before. And this is even more deeper than that, because there's strictly, at least I couldn't find any simple relationship between the doping dependence of the charge and the spinning commensurabilities in the system. So this is really a charge-only thing. So as we heard this morning, there was other evidence for the charge order. So from NMR, from hard X-ray diffraction, as Johan is going to discuss about it. So the main difference with soft and hard X-ray is that with hard X-ray, you have access to a much larger portion of the reciprocal space, and they could also work out the structure of this charge order along the C-axis, for which we are completely blind. So they see some kind of modulation of the order along the C-axis, and they could also look at the magnetic field dependence here. From ultrasound measurements, and there are many more actually evidence for charge order that I don't have time to describe here. One of the key questions in all this cuprates problem, as we heard, is what's intrinsic, you know, what's actually real properties or genuine properties of the doped copper oxide plane, and what is strongly material dependence. And it's a problem that is hard to address, because some of these samples are very nice for some probes and really not nice for other probes. So what we've been doing following the discoveries on YBCO is that we've been starting collaboration with many groups and found out the peak also in single layer BISCO together with Andrea Damacelli. Is going to present this result later on, so I'm not going to insist. in bilayer BSCO. And one important note, though, is that the peak, the signal that we see with resonant X-ray actually matches what is seen from STM, the so-called checkerboard. And also, more recently, in the Mercury. So it's more recently, it's not that recent, but it took a while to get published. And so in the Mercury compound, we also found this thing. So altogether, in BSCO, in YBCO, single layer, bilayer, there's some kind of charge order is seen. Although in all this system, the correlation length is much weaker than what is observed in YBCO. So the temperature and field dependence, as has already been shown, so essentially, so we see the apparition of this peak way above the critical temperature here, which is around 60 Kelvin for this doping level. So it appears around slightly below 150 Kelvin. And when you apply a magnetic field perpendicular to the copper oxide plant, essentially you kill superconductivity and you enhance the charge order, and which is clear evidence for a competition with superconductivity. So on the other hand, if you look really at the temperature dependence of this curve, it doesn't really look like anything like a real charge order or real order parameter. You know, you get this negative curvature here, and this strong temperature dependence also of the correlation length, which makes us think that what we are looking at zero field here is essentially more the fluctuations of an incipient order. And most importantly, the onset temperature is always much lower than the T star temperature that is seen with NMR, for instance. So we measured a lot of samples and worked out this kind of temperature dependence for the charge density wave. And what we found is that, yeah, it's not increasing linearly with doping as would the pseudo gap do. It really has this dome-like shape, which the maximum value close to 12%. And essentially what's amazing is that this charge density wave exists in the region where quantum oscillations are seen and transport in the case of Fermi surface reconstruction in high magnetic field. So this is, for instance, the work, recent work from Brad Ramshaw, which shows the suppression of the superconducting dome TC with a large magnetic field. And well, they look also at the effective mass of the electrons and say that there is basically two quantum critical points hidden below this dome here, which is consistent with many other measurements. And well, if you want to address what's the nature of this quantum critical point, speculative, I mean, that are probably hidden below this superconducting dome, that would be, in YBCO at least, the separation between this incommensurate static, quasi-static spin density wave here, with the charge density wave only, and at higher doping between the charge density wave metal with reconstructed Fermi surface and a good Fermi liquid. So now I get to the doping dependence of the incommensurability now. So if you look at the whole doping dependence of this peak that we see, so this supersurgical peak as function of doping, what we find is this linear increase as we decrease the doping in YBCO. And what we found also is that essentially the peak is the narrowest for this 12% doping thing. So you get some kind of maximization of the correlation length. So not only on the intensity, but also of the correlation length close to 12% doping, as well as with the onset temperature. And as I will explain later on, this seems to have some link, and which this link is very unclear, but it seems to have some link with the evolution of the Fermi surface in this system. So when you think of a charge density wave or charge modulation related to the Fermi surface, the first thing to do is to try to look for Fermi surface nesting. And Ole Andersen and the Max Planck Institute made this calculation like ages ago, 91. Now we're getting the time where some people in the audience were probably not born at that time. Essentially, if you look at the electronic susceptibility that you get from such electronic dispersion, you get some peaks, which are not real divergence, but these peaks are at wave vectors that really don't match what we see experimentally. In this work together with Ali Yazdani, what Eduardo realized analyzing the STM data is that the quasi-particles that were involved in this charge order were actually closer from the nodes than from the antinodes. So again, this would be a good nesting from the antinodal regions here. But this gives a wave vector that is always too small. With Ricardo Comin, it's been proposed that, again, if you start from the non-interacting Fermi surface, the wave vector at which you see the charge order would be always too small, and you have to take into account the pseudo-gapped Fermi surface as a starting point, saying that the charge wave might be coming from the nesting of the tip of the Fermi arc here, but most importantly, would be an incipient instability of the pseudo-gapped state. Then there was a question of whether this order was static, long-range, or fluctuating. And we heard from Marc-Henri that now, looking at the broadening of the oxygen lines, it was quite clear that it was dealing with also some static order. And what we did is to perform high-resolution inelastic X-ray scattering, so to look essentially at the phonons and the elastic line here. And what we found is this enhancement of the elastic line at the wave vector where the charge density wave happens. So it's really something, the signal that we see in energy integrated probe is really coming from the elastic channel. So as far as we can say, down to less than a millielectron volt resolution, or we can resolve this below the millielectron volt, even though the resolution is a bit higher. So this is really coming from a quasi-static charge order, and this is interpreted by the pinning of the fluctuations on the defects, so in the form of small patches with correlation lengths of 5-6 nanometers. And yeah, associated with that, there are also some phonon anomalies. So we see this very nice renormalization of the acoustic and optical phonons across the superconducting transition, which again tells us that there is some relationship with the Fermi surface and the electron phonon coupling here, but it's very different from what is seen in, say, niobium diselenides or other electron phonon coupling driven charge density wave. There's no soft mode here, strictly speaking. Or at least we don't see a clear softening of the mode in the normal state where the onset of the charge density wave is seen. So these are more or less some of the findings that we got from X-ray scattering, and I would just like to give some thoughts now about the relationship that it might have or not with what is found in the striped compound. So, and as been already mentioned this morning, one of the disturbing difference is really the opposite doping evolution of the charge peak in the YBCO as compared to the striped order compounds, and the fact that, well, in YBCO this has really no relation with what happens in the spin channel, whereas there's a strong interdependence in the 214 compounds. So one thing, of course, is first the charge order always sets in before. So I don't know any system where the stripe order is seen with a concomitant ordering of post charge and spin. So it might be related to the different energy scales of the probes that are looking at it. But it seems quite generic that the charge order is always appearing first. And in this system, at least, there's also this low temperature tetragonal phase transition that is sought to stabilize the stripe. And the question is whether that transition plays any role in forming stripes against a charge density wave. So I don't have the answer, but one of the very nice set of experiments that was also that came out also last year on the LSCO, then it was a kind of missing link, where there's no LTT phase, actually show a very similar dome than what we had in YBCO, though at lower temperature. So again, the charge density wave shows up much above the magnetic order here. The incommensurability now is the same that what you see in LBCO and in striped order compound, but the field dependence is strikingly similar to what is seen in YBCO. So it acts essentially the same behavior than the good old stripe in LBCO, except that the correlation lengths are much smaller And this might be due to the fact that there you don't have this LTT phase. Now, if you look, and I guess we're going to hear about that more, if you look at the transport properties, and for instance, the Seebeck coefficient, the change of the sign of the Seebeck coefficient here clearly indicates that there is this reconstructed Fermi surface, which is similar in YBCO or in this European LBCO, but also in the mercury compound. So the whole coefficients and all these kind of things, and the fact that you also have quantum oscillations in the mercury compound, it just looks like all the signature of charge order in all these compounds are very strikingly similar, despite the fact that if you look now at the magnetic excitation spectrum, so these are the dispersions, the famous hourglass dispersion observed in all these compounds. So, well, there are some similarities here, right? So you get this incommensurate structure, which can or cannot be gapped, depending on the system, but it looks like it's commensurate. And this very recent result from the group of Martin Greven, which puzzled me a lot, it actually shows that in the mercury compound, where we also found this charnency wave there is simply no incommensurabilities in the magnetic order. So this kind of questions now the universality of the, at least of the low energy part of that spectrum. And well, given the fact that all the system have this charge order and shows very similar transport properties, well, these are the discussion here, that NMR sun velocity measurements indicate that you get actually a long range, or let's say thermodynamic phase transition, around 15 Tesla, without the slightest hint of magnetic ordering, although, as been mentioned already, it's not necessary that the I field charge order is the same that what is seen without the field. So that actually is a question that remains to be addressed and we need to figure out. But what I found very puzzling, and I'd like maybe to trigger the discussion in this direction, is that the details about the incommensurabilities and the magnetic excitation spectrum seem to be completely irrelevant as far as the Fermi surface reconstruction is concerned. And I'm sorry, I couldn't come with other things that the charge didn't charge. So that's essentially what I wanted to say. And do we have some more time? Or get some?
You have 4 minutes.
4 minutes. So if I have 4 minutes, I would just flash quickly another recent result. So to add complexity to the complexity, this is a system we have been playing with recently. In the institute, I mean, over the last 10 years at least, where we do some superlattices of fully oxygenated YBCO with ferromagnetic lanthanum calcium manganite. And so we make superlattices with different thickness. So we essentially grow this superlattices of YBCO. So we grow a layer of YBCO and we intercalate some LCMO layer in there, with different thickness of YBCO. And what we find, which was very surprisingly, is that in this super lattice with like 50 nanometers of YBCO, and you see a very clear signature of the charge ordered peak as well, despite the fact that, so we have other evidence that it's actually fully oxygenated. So there is some charge transfer that we know from the LCMO to the YBCO that is actually under doping the YBCO. But what I find fairly amazing is that if you look now at the temperature dependence of that and the field dependence of the charge order in that system, it actually looks very different from what is seen in the bulk state. So instead of having this cusp-like curve with a clear evidence for competition with superconductivity, in the superlattice, it really looks like more you get this order parameter light shape, like if you get a long-range order. And on the other hand, if you look at the field dependence, you find essentially nothing. So you can apply, we have only 6 Tesla, but up to 6 Tesla, the peak remains strictly identical to what it is without the field. So it seems to show that here we have a way to somewhat stabilize the charge density wave on a fairly long range without applying a super high field. And that would be maybe an interesting way to investigate the relationship between charge order and superconductivity without having to deal with two extreme conditions. And with this, I just want to thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mathieu.